For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? It's All-Star and World Series champ Nick Swisher here, and I'm stoked to tell you about my new podcast, The Nick Swisher Show, right here on Podcast One. If you know me, you know I've worn a lot of hats in my career, and each one of them has had highs, lows, and a whole lot of learning in between. And that's exactly what I'm bringing to this podcast. You're going to get crazy interviews with athletes from their struggles to their successes and all their unbelievable superstitions along the way. You're going to hear from hometown heroes that are stepping up to the plate and making positive change and influences in their communities. I mean, we've got scientists, coaches, comedians. I'm telling you, whether you're an athlete, a parent, a coach, or just looking for a little energy in your life, then Home Plate is right here. It's old school soul with new school vibes. It's the Nick Swisher Show, coming soon wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Yeah, get on, get on, and here we are at SEMA. I'm Adam Carolla, it's Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea over there, sitting high atop the MagnaFlow booth. So we're on an observation platform, and you can hear people talking around us and other things, because we're right in the middle of SEMA, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's been a very interesting show. Some pretty big debuts. You know, our friends from the Ring Brothers debuted four cars, which seems like a hell of a lot of work to bring four cars.
Yeah, the Ring Brothers are the creme de la creme in terms of car builds. No detail unspared, and we got the Blazer, right? It was a 72 Blazer.
Yeah, I believe that was the year. So they had the Blazer.
We got the...
They had a Gen 1 Camaro. They had like a 69 Camaro. That was a 69 Mustang. And then they had the crazy sort of Formula 1-inspired truck. What was that, a 48? I think it was a 48.
40-something truck. I mean, it's all... It's so...
There's nothing left on it.
It's mind-numbing. We're looking down at Kevin Hart's cars now. He's an American Muscle guy. He's got a few Dodges down here, lots of custom builds.
So Kevin Hart brought out a Grand National, which was a build. Apparently he owns an original Grand National that maybe about 6,000 miles, mint condition. Thought about doing that into a project, but instead just found... a high mileage, kind of rougher Grand National, actually one with an engine swap, so there wasn't an original motor. So the one that he built was with a Cadillac ATS turbocharged motor in it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of the twin turbos, they converted it to a single turbo to give it sort of the look of the Grand National motor.
Right, because the originals had the 3.8 with the single turbo on there. This is a 3-liter with a single, I don't know how much horsepower it makes, but who cares?
Yeah,
I
mean, but it's got all the modern amenities, and it's built up perfectly, and it's just, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a cool piece. I mean, there's just tons of treats if you're into the car world out here. And just... the quality of everything, the fit and the finish of everything, just, you know, and just kind of stuff you couldn't get. Like, I was walking around and I found the disc brake setup that's made to put under the stock rims if you have a 60s Corvette or a 60s Mustang and you want to upgrade from the drum to the disc. But then you want the original look with the original rims. Now somebody makes a kit that works, yeah, that you can fit underneath your original rims and still have some good stopping power. And it's just stuff like that, like stuff that didn't used to really exist. Now it all exists out there.
So that's a good point, because as we walk around, and it's been, I think, a few years since you've been here, but everything is just getting more sophisticated, more impressive. The quality of parts, the use of like CAD and 3D printing, not just the builds, like Ring Brothers builds and you know, the Kevin Hart builds that Speedcore has done for them. But look at the parts. Look at the incredible performance. We just, you know, we sit down and we chat with guys going, how are we making more advancements on carburetors and hydraulic roller lifters? And they are.
I walked by a display that had 25 different hinge hoods, all billet, all beautiful, all aluminum, anodized, whatever. Like, just the choice of aftermarket hood hinges that you could buy versus, you know, just a few years ago, like maybe one company made them. Yeah. And then what would happen is you'd see the cars, you know, on the circuit, they'd all have the same hood hinge.
Right.
And or they did that with steering wheels for a while.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, someone came out with a billet steering wheel.
That guy's got that hood hinge. And it's like, it was kind of like, it was cool. It was better than the stock, but it was like, if every custom car was using the same steering wheel and the same hood hinge, then how custom was it? And now there's 25 just in one corner.
Restoration was the big thing, and it still is, but a lot of the restoration companies are offering like custom or sort of upgraded hot rod versions of things. An example that you and I just saw was TMI products. They make interiors, and TMI for a long time was who you'd go to get the replacement seat covers for your Mustang and Camaro. Now they have upgraded versions with bolsters and high back seats and whatever, but then you saw interior in a box. You know, like, you could just call them up and go, I want everything. The door panels, the seat covers, the carpets, like, just send me the whole thing.
It's a good time if you're into the hobby, because there's so much out there. And then there's all the cool vintage cars that were converted to electric cars.
Yeah,
so now you can have your old 911 or your VW or whatever it is, and now they're all electric. I mean, this place is always a good example of, if you just kind of get out of the way and let people try to innovate and entrepreneurs and try to start businesses, you'll have some pretty good products.
And we were talking about that earlier before we started recording, is so many of these companies were like family businesses. Somebody was like, I'm going to build an exhaust company, or I was making, you know, manifolds. And not only did they design and engineer and get these parts made, but they built companies to go with it. And some of these companies are $500 million companies now. It's impressive.
Yeah, and it's always good to be surrounded by sort of like-minded people that are into the hobby. There's no, the biggest display out here is Dodge.
Yeah.
They're taking center stage. They brought 8 or 10, 12 vehicles out here, and they seem to have picked up where Ford left off, because Ford used to have the biggest spread out here.
Yeah, Chevrolet Performance and Ford had big footprints here, and they opted out to have a booth, but Ford still has 10 cars that they do with builders here on the at the SEMA show, and Chevrolet as well. But
there was I didn't tell you, Mike and I saw a BRE electric truck tribute truck. So not in this hall, in the first hall we went in, fourth hall or whatever, there's a truck it's a Nissan truck from like 1987. It's a mini little truck.
Yeah.
It's as small as my mini trucks from the 70s. And I was saying to Mike, this truck doesn't look familiar to me. It looks kind of like a Datsun mini truck, but it doesn't quite look right. he thought it was a Subaru Brat. It had a couple of weird, where the bed hit the cab, it swooped down. It was like unibody. It wasn't like the bed was separate from the cab and mine. There was like connect the two with a frame. 87 said they only released it in Japan and Australia. And it had a Nissan Leaf motor in it. And it was motorized truck. Had the Nissan Leaf motor in it hooked to the original 4-speed that was in the car.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which I thought was interesting as well. Which, again, if you're going to start getting into motorized power plants, but you're doing it in an old-school platform like a 911 or the Nissan truck, part of what people want is that shifter and the clutch. And this guy, three pedals, you know, H pattern, 4-speed, Nissan Leaf up front, batteries in the back, had it done up like Brock's, the 46 car that Morton won the Trans Am Championship in. Oh, we're showing a picture of it. And it's got kind of the Japanese mirrors mounted up front on the fender, and it's pretty cool. It's not as cool to me because I have BRE cars.
But you also had a mini truck.
But I had a mini truck. And guy's out of, like, North Carolina, I think. I'm looking at Mike. South Carolina. Yeah, cool guy, cool build. Just one of many people who are just out here doing their thing, got projects, excited about new projects, next projects. And said he met with Brock. Said Pete Brock, you know, consulted with him. I love that Brock is still so involved after all these years. And there you have it. I don't know, Chris, what's it say? It's like a Nissan Sweet Bunny or something. They always give it some gay name. It goes somewhere.
Sunny truck.
But only in Australia, only in Japan. Yeah.
I saw the announcement for it and some of the specs. I knew it was the Nissan Leaf drivetrain, or based off it. And maybe they cranked up the voltage a little bit. Maybe they got a little more power out of it. But I haven't seen it in person yet. So
it's little. All those trucks are little. Like mini trucks, you know, they got the word mini right in. I mean, when you see Dawson pulling up in that 40-foot land yacht of his that says Toyota on the front of it, it blows my mind every single day.
You would never think
that's a
Toyota
Japanese truck. Japanese trucks were the smallest vehicles on the road, and just to see what they've turned into is absolutely insane to me. Yeah. But those trucks were miniature, and again, nice to see the BRE color scheme, tribute, and all that still going strong.
Yeah, and there's another one. There's a 510 over in another booth. I don't forgot which booth. I think it's like Braille lithium batteries or something like that. So they got a little tribute. So a little bit of BRE love here this year.
Yeah, which is always good. Always good for Pete to be. And also, I mean, not only that, but there's a couple of Cobra Daytonas in the Superformance booth and the
at Factory 5.
Factory 5, the other one who does his knockoffs or, you know, tribute cars or whatever. All right, so you're going to do a lot of interviews.
Yeah, I'm going to run around and dig into some of the aftermarket parts that are new this year. So we'll be doing that.
All right, from SEMA 2022.
All right, we're in the Holley booth, which seems to be growing more and more and more companies over time with Evan Perkins. How are you, Evan?
Very, very good. Yeah, we're bigger every day. It's a huge umbrella of brands now.
So last year, Holley wasn't at SEMA, right?
That's correct.
It was kind of a weird SEMA last year.
It was a weird SEMA. Everybody was coming off of the COVID shutdown, and I think everybody was a little tentative about if it was the time to come back or not, or if it would even happen, just because we all kind of thought it was going to until one day it didn't, so...
You know, what we've talked about over the past few years, coming over here and checking in with Holley for quite some time, is how you guys have acquired a bunch of companies over the years. Mm-hmm. And in the past 2 years, there's been more. I've noticed Classic Instruments. I've noticed Bear Brakes. I didn't even know about that one.
Yeah, there's been more than a few. We're at about 70-plus brands now. And some of those are active brands that were acquisitions, and others are just kind of historic nameplates and a few that we've even launched internally.
Right on. It's how many brands you guys think you have under the Holly umbrella right now?
It is about 70.
Yeah, 70? Yeah, okay.
It's a big number.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Taking a look at some of the new parts here, I know there's a lot to cover, but just kind of giving an overview on stuff. Let's start with the headlights. You guys get into...
Sure. So we've got a brand called RetroByte, and what it is it's an LED headlight, and it's not your typical, you know, you have to modify the car for it. The whole goal with RetroByte is that if you have a car that has a sealed beam, round or rectangle, we have a light for you, and it's a plug-and-play solution. So it uses half the current, it's three times brighter, and it lasts six times longer.
But the design of them and the look of them is what I think is important. There's a lot of like 6-inch, 7-inch round light replacements, but I'm seeing kind of these goofy looking kind of LEDs, and they don't
right.
really match the look of the vehicle. Like the original lens has, you know, whatever, it has like that kind of texture or something to it.
Yeah, so you touched on something really good. A lot of the options are very goofy, and it's because they come from the off-road side. So the Jeep JK Wrangler used, you know, a H3 or kind of a later model halogen housing, but it kind of fit the earlier sealed beam stuff. Not perfectly, but a lot of guys were adapting those and taking those LED options and then applying them to muscle cars and vintage vehicles. So you kind of had that light that worked better, but it didn't really fit the look of the car.
Yeah.
So our concept is it fits the look of the car exceptionally well. So they look just like sealed beam lights. We've got two bulb colors, a 3000 and a 5700 Kelvin. So you've got your bright modern light, or you've got kind of a classic, more yellowy tone.
Right, it's got a little bit of that amber into it,
right.
But just being a lot brighter and a little bit more reliable.
And if you have a Euro car, you want the yellow tint, we actually have a yellow tinted housing. So it's three color options, but two light bulb options.
Now, is it completely sealed or is there a bulb replacement? Like, how are you guys
There is a bulb replacement. So you're buying the housing is kind of a for life deal. It bolts into the car exactly as if you were replacing a glass sealed beam, no modifications, and even the pigtail will plug into the factory harness on a vintage car, which is really nice because nobody wants to chop up their harness if they can avoid it. But the lights are serviceable, are replaceable. If you decide, you know, you put the classic light in, you're like, you know what, I really do want that modern bright color, you can swap them out.
Right, okay. And then kind of moving on into the lineup, because there's so many things here. You guys were working on intakes as well?
Yeah, so we've got some new intake options. We've got a Gen 3 Hemi high ram. So the high ram was huge in the LS world. And then we just kind of took that really popular intake and then modified it to fit on a Gen 3 Hemi. So that's a really kind of aggressive runner. It's good for engines that are revving really high, larger displacement, forced induction, things like that. Gives those guys something that's a lot more robust and performance-oriented than the factory plastic intake manifolds.
Let's talk about fuel injection for system. The Holley EFI system seems to really taken off over the past, I don't know, more than a few years now, but continues to improve. What do you think is driving that? Is it a lot of the, you kind of install it and learn, you know, the self-learning capabilities for the home guy, or do you have a lot of tuners that are now working with Holley EFI?
So we kind of support both the DIY enthusiast and the professional. So our advanced systems like the Dominator and the HP and even the Terminator X are extremely capable, and they're great for somebody that wants to get in there on a laptop and tune and really dial the thing in. We also have the Sniper stuff, which is a very, very accessible EFI that bolts on in place of a carb. It's got some self-learning capability, and that's really good for the person that wants that drivability improvement and wants to dip their toe into EFI, but isn't maybe ready to go the full port fuel injection route.
Okay.
But I think the big surge that you're seeing in EFI is because a lot of these guys that remember their first car fondly, well, they get that car again. They're at an age and a point in life where they can afford to buy it. And then they get in and they drive it, and they realize that it doesn't drive as good as what they're driving today.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, they're nostalgic for it. They love the look. They love the feel. But then they go to start it, and it's cold outside, and it cranks, and it cranks, and it cranks, and it backfires. You know, or they smell like gas when they get out of it because it's running so rich. So we've got a couple systems, especially the Sniper line, that really gives those guys a chance to drive that nostalgic car, you know, on a more daily basis or more frequent basis without, you know, having some of the concessions of driving an older vehicle.
Yeah, right. I used a very, very early Holley system, kind of the kind of the bolt-on system back in the day. It was a little more complex back then.
Like a projection, maybe?
Yeah. It was a little more complex, but they've seemed to have gotten so much better. And you're right, getting that drivability to be able to get in the car, fire that car up, mm-hmm. Dialing it in so, you know, it doesn't have to run rich just to run rich to sake for, you know, you can add a little bit of margin of safety by running a little rich, but now having it be as efficient as possible. Because the early systems, like the projection stuff, even guys that were trying to tune them were new at tuning them, and they're like, well, we run it a little rich to run safe. I was like, yeah, but everything smells like gasoline in my car.
You know,
It's a little too much.
It's come a long way. Just the sensors themselves, the size of computers, you know, the things that we can do in a very limited space, it's a lot better than it ever was. And, you know, the real-time tuning and the feedback from O2 sensors, that just wasn't a thing back in the day.
You know,
when systems like you're describing existed, we had narrow-band O2 sensors, and they could only read this very, very specific fuel mixture. And that was good for an OEM where you knew exactly what was on the car, what engine it was, and things didn't really change. But when you've got an aftermarket cylinder head and an aftermarket camshaft and all of these new variables, you really have to be able to read a wide spectrum of fuel mixtures to truly know what's going on, adjust it on the fly, and change. And now we have the capability to do that.
Yeah, the system seemed really fantastic, and kind of looking forward to see where it goes, getting control over more parameters. That's kind of the thing. It's like there's, I don't know, 100, maybe 200 different things you can control within the engine, but to simplify it, you guys need to make, you know, 12 or 15 things really kind of tunable.
Yeah, the Holley software was really, really all about, you know, usability and ergonomics and being able to not be an expert tuner and get in there and understand what you're looking at. You're not writing code. You're looking at numbers that are relevant to you. And we have areas where you can get really deep into it and get to those advanced levels, but we know that that's not something everybody is going to need to do. So we try to make it where not everybody has to.
Right. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about off-road. More companies that you guys have acquired over the years, getting more into that aspect. What are you guys doing there?
Yeah, so Arizona Desert Shocks is new to the Holley brand, and they've got a great system for Broncos. So it's a bypass shock. It's a 3 to 4 inch lift on some of the base models, a little bit less on trucks that have the Sasquatch package, but it's a fantastic riding shock, lets you carry a little bit more speed through rough terrain. And one of the big benefits is that they're offering part numbers for the 4-cylinder trucks and also for the 6-cylinder trucks. So there's not a compromised spring rate or tuning, you know, just because it's like, oh, it's Bronco and everything's Bronco.
Yeah.
It's actually tailored to what you have.
Okay.
So those are a fantastic option. And then we have them for the Toyota Tacoma as well. And those have been a really, really great seller for the brand. But it's, you know, if you get into the overlanding thing and you carry a lot of weight and you drive on rough terrain, the factory twin tube shock, just sometimes it isn't enough. There's not enough volume of fluid in it. They get hot. They start to fade. The truck starts riding bad. So this gives you a little bit more control and comfort.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I think a lot of people associate Holley with American vehicles.
Right.
You know, muscle cars and truck stuff especially. Mm-hmm. But now you guys are into the import lines. You got Audi, you got BMW.
Dinan and APR were an acquisition, and they're very strong in those markets. So we kind of just let them keep doing their things. It just kind of gives us another way to help enthusiasts, you know, interact with their cars and increase performance. And those two have exceptional reputations in those marketplaces. But, you know, Holley at its core, we're all about enthusiasts. You know, as Bill Tischner would say, you know, we're the dream makers, right?
Yeah.
We make the gold and we help people build their dream cars. So whether that's a BMW or a Ford Mustang, you know, we're kind of here to help you do that.
Over time, how do some of the brands, because, you know, like you said, you've acquired a lot of companies over the years. Some of them are already doing well, so you really don't want to mess with that recipe, right? So you don't want to touch them. But eventually, you think those guys are going to call and go, hey, listen, you know, Holley Parent Group, you know, we're developing stuff for the latest BMW or Audi or whatever. We want to get into ignition coils and stuff. You know, we want to tap into the guys at MSD, which you own.
Right.
You know, are we starting to get to that? Are we starting to get some of your brands going, well, who else can I talk to when you're under the umbrella and start working with them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, you know, being a bigger company that we bring to the table is those resources in technology and engineering. So, you know, you might have somebody from MSD helping APR engineer a coil for an Audi, and that doesn't mean it should be an MSD product, but that collection of resources and capability is absolutely shared across the brands. So like the think tank is centralized,
right?
But we kind of understand what brands represent what to what people, and that's an ongoing dialogue that we're very, very careful about, because the brand allegiances are huge and the brand authority is really, really important. So we've got to put the right product with the right brand, and you know, that's something that's just very, very near and dear to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, from the top down.
Okay, so what else are we missing now? Because there's so many things in the booth, but...
It's a lot, and we only brought the new stuff.
I saw some front-engine accessories. I saw some cast stuff. Not everything has to be billet and really, really expensive.
Right, right.
I saw... I guess you could explain what it is, but I don't know what motors it's for, but...
Sure. So one of the things that Holley jumped into about 25 years ago now was the engine swap world. And we have just become synonymous with LS swaps. We've got the stuff to bolt them in. You know, we've got the stuff to tune them. We've got the front drives. We've got the exhaust components, the intakes. I mean, we really have just kind of done it from top to bottom. And that's done. You know, we've supported that market and we'll continue to support that market. But now there's new engine platforms that are being adopted by enthusiasts. So Gen 3 Hemi has been around for a long time, but we're really starting to see people ask for products to help them integrate that, not just into Mopars, but across different vehicle platforms. So we've got a Gen 3 Hemi swap manifold. So it's a cast iron manifold. It flows very well. It's not quite a header, but the point of it is it's very affordable and it tucks everything super close to the engine. So if you're trying to get this into a narrow chassis, it gives you a lot more room to work. We've got a front drive, which encompasses all of the accessories, and some of the Mopar truck engines, they're very wide already, and they put a lot of the accessories low and out, kind of very, very close to the frame rails in a modern truck. That doesn't work in, say, a 64A body.
Yeah.
So we're trying to redesign that front drive, give somebody something that's very simple, holds everything off of one cast timing cover, so you don't have a billion brackets to worry about, and will actually fit chassis. So our goal is to help people put more Hemis in more things.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time. It looks like it's a very, very busy booth. You got some cool cars in here as well. Holley.com, is that where everybody should be going now?
Yep.
I mean, I know people love their brands, and they're going to go to APR, they're going to go to Dyna, they're going to go whatever, but everything could be sort of found at Holley.
That's absolutely correct. Holley.com, and follow us on social. We've got a pretty active social media feed, and we really love interacting with enthusiasts.
Awesome. Evan, thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, here we are at Optima Batteries with Cam Douglas. Cam is the boss over here. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I know there's a lot of new products, but also the Optima Challenge. We can get into a little bit of that. I think that's what's happening on outside. Otherwise, you guys are just making a lot of noise for no reason because it sounds pretty exciting out there.
Well, if you make noise, smoke, people come.
People come.
Yes.
Let's talk about the business side of it, the battery side of
it. Sure.
Optima Batteries, definitely something that I think – that we've all had our hands on at some point. They're all over our cars. But how has the product line changed? What's going on this year?
Well, some interesting things. We've expanded our AGM line, our traditional product that we've created since, you know, the early 90s. And we've expanded that into a flat plate design, which is called our Pure Flow design, in mainly products for more modern cars.
Okay.
So, and when I say more modern, it we never had a product that fit European cars. Now we do, that go, you know, back even further. But modern and domestic cars are now using that European version. It's called DIN.
Yeah.
And so we launched a new H5 battery this year, which will fit most of the smaller European compact cars. So a 3 Series BMW, an A Series Audi, Volkswagen Golf, etc.
Okay.
And it's being used in a lot of EVs as kind of their 12-volt power source.
Okay, sure.
Then the big exciting news for us is our entrance into power sports. with a lithium line of batteries.
Okay.
It's called our HyperCore. And we have six different sizes. It'll fit 95% of all power sports vehicles, everything from, you know, small motorcycles all the way to side-by-sides. So, and they're extremely light, extremely powerful, and extremely safe. So kind of big differentiator from ours versus others that are out there. We've taken a lot of time and care to make sure that they have a battery management system that keeps them safe and also has some unique features like our power link cable, which comes outside the battery compartment and can mount on a swing arm or a handlebar, and it tells the status of the battery. And it also doubles as a maintainer connection point. So you can do all that outside, you know, because some bikes, if you're familiar with putting batteries in bikes, sometimes you put them in there and it's like takes a lot of work to put them in this small little compartment. You never get to it. So you don't know if the battery's charged or not. So that's what this power link cable does.
What are some of the difficulties in getting into lithium battery power line? There's the cost of entry, and I don't know, is it a safety thing? Is it a charging thing? We see the benefits, right? The benefits being, we want lighter weight.
Yes.
In the power sports, but also in the vehicles like you talked about. But I don't know, are they not as powerful? Are they more powerful? Or are they just more expensive?
There's a lot of different things. Yeah. I mean, your question, I could sit here and talk to you all day about it. But one of the biggest concern for us, that people say, hey, you're kind of late to the market. These things have been out for 10 years. They've been out for 10 years, and they've had a lot of issues with them. I have some personal friends that have, you know, used them, and one almost burned their shop down, right? So there's the biggest issue for us was safety. Having a correct battery management system, having the right chemistry of lithium, those things go hand in hand to make sure that you have something that's safe. Now, when you make something safe, that obviously adds cost because we've got a little miniature computer in each battery.
Okay.
And that battery or that computer is monitoring each one of those cells as it's being charged and charged and discharged. So.
And how do they compare to your AGM line of batteries? Are they the same power, same like cranking amps, or do they last longer, or is the life shorter? Like, how does it?
So if they're used correctly, they should last a lot longer.
Okay.
They have more consistent power over their discharge cycle. So, you know, as a lead acid battery discharges and loses some of its energy, you can tell. It starts a little slower as the voltage goes down. A lithium battery carries that high capability of producing all of its power for longer, and then it drops off like a cliff.
Okay.
Right? So it's just a different type of power. Now, cycling, it's like your iPhone.
Right.
Has a lithium battery, a different chemistry, but it has a lithium battery. And one of the benefits there, it'll cycle, 1,000 times?
Right.
3,000 times?
Yeah.
I don't know what an Apple product, but I know that when I buy a new iPhone, it'll last me a year, and I'm charging it a couple times a day. You and I are riding phones, right? So that's a huge benefit, where a lead-acid battery, the best ones out there, the best Optima batteries we have that cycle the most, cycle maybe 300 times mm-hmm. to complete discharge and when it's dead, and then you recharge it again. Our lithium batteries are 1,000 plus.
Okay.
So there's a cycling benefit. There's that power benefit, the consistency of power over time. You brought up lightweight. They're extremely light compared to lead acid. But it is still that safety management that is a big priority for us.
The typical car battery is, what, on average about 40 pounds?
Yeah, you're right, 40 pounds.
And what would be the lithium equivalent?
Well, lithium equivalent for that size would be different, but it would be quite a bit less. And again, depending on the chemistry, how much lithium you want to put in that box. But like our Quad 30 battery, which I can't remember the weight, but I think it's maybe around 15 pounds. We put that in a Ford Raptor last week and then drove it all week. And so But that's in Southern California, right?
Right. Yeah.
If you wouldn't do that in the Midwest, because of the cold. But just saying, it has the power to do that. So if you're doing a track day car or with Adams race cars, you might want to run a lithium battery in there just to keep the weight down.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that in fair weather and you're not worried about running electric fans and things like that that consume a lot of power, you might be able to get by with a 15-pound battery instead of a 40-pound battery.
In racing specifically, like what you were talking about, like maybe one of Adam Carolla's cars, that makes sense. Certainly the weight savings, but also the attribute you were talking about, keeping the voltage up even as the battery discharges, and then if it falls off, it just sort of falls off a cliff.
Yep.
That's fine, but you'll notice the difference in racing, right? Any electronic ignition boxes, those last few laps.
Yep.
Right? If you're losing battery power, but if it lasted and then you charge the battery when you bring it back in.
It's a compromise, though, right? Because you have that amp hour, which you want to extend the electrical fuel energy, right, for as long as you can. Because if you lose an alternator, that's where that amp hour comes in. So in a traditional automotive battery, you might have 50 amp hour, right? And the lithium equivalent that can still start the vehicle might only have 15.
Okay.
So you might, if you get caught without an alternator, on a regular basis, or you want that safety, you may want to consider sticking with a lead acid battery or a larger lithium battery.
Yeah, okay.
So that's a concern. But as you said, kind of that consistency of its power delivery makes things more tunable, right?
Yeah.
It's what like bracket racers want all the time. As that battery discharges, they don't want their tune to change as it discharges, because then their horsepower changes, then their times will change. They want to hit 1090s every time. 1090s,
every time,
right?
Yeah.
Every time. So a lithium battery might be a benefit there.
Okay.
The way that discharge works keeps that consistent. You tune it once, and as it discharges, 50%, its tune stays the same.
How have cars changed that maybe has forced you guys to continue to change and innovate with battery technology? Because the cars are getting more complicated.
Right.
They seem to be more sensitive to the amount of power that the battery generates.
Yeah, big time.
Like you said, the ECU and the engine management systems go wacky. Complete infotainment systems, like all the cars today seem to be communicating with themselves far more than just to
the
engine and back.
Yeah.
Right?
You'll notice on modern cars, when you look at the battery terminals, there's two new wires going in there.
Yeah.
And there's this little box there that's doing something. It's monitoring temperature. It's monitoring the amperage flow. It's doing things that, older vehicles never did before. But they're doing those for a lot of reasons. And the main reason is it can control that alternator. And the alternators put, when they're activated and when there's a load on them, that creates drag on the motor.
Yeah.
It decreases fuel economy, right? So it's a big fuel economy thing, plus performance. So if you can get better performance and better fuel economy by monitoring that battery rather than just having it go on all the time, then you'll gain both of those things, performance and fuel economy.
The modern day cars that have this auto start stop feature at every stoplight, does that irritate you?
Well, it seems
to irritate me, but I don't know if it irritates you from an engineering standpoint.
I have the corporate response, and then I have my personal response.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're always looking for ways to partner with OEs and looking for ways to increase fuel economy. I mean, it's just the world we live in, and plus it's with the price of fuel, especially in Southern California, it's like, yeah, I want to. Anyway, but yeah, I've got two cars with start-stop technology, and I can't tell you that they're always turned on.
Yeah.
But it does work great. To answer your question, though, as far as how the battery reacts, it places a lot more demand on the battery. So we actually make, within our larger company, Clarios, we make batteries that are made to perform better in start-stop technology or start-stop applications. Optima, we're working on that chemistry that will be able to give a long life in that application as well.
Is there a way to, like on that start-stop feature, if you're sitting in traffic, like we're in LA, we're sitting in traffic all the time, and if you don't disable that feature, you can hit that thing 40, 50, 60 yeah. times sitting in traffic. Does it make sense for the battery to restart the motor every time, or should the battery, maybe it does this, maybe the battery should charge some capacitor that has just like one shot and then that helps to start the motor, and then as you're engine's running and now again the alternator's on again for a few more minutes before you stop in traffic, it kind of recharges that capacitor. Does that make sense?
It does make sense to me, but I'm a dumb marketing guy. So once you get into, I got other people I call into the conversation, but our product team is working on ways to make that battery kind of have that I'd say that combination of what you're talking about
yeah.
in one box. But it is still using lead acid technology for start stop. But yeah, to your point, that's probably when start stop technology gets the most annoying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
LA traffic,
of course, we're just sitting in traffic and just doing it. You got to turn it off. All the time. And, when that technology came out, there was a few cars that if you turned it off, it would stay off. And now they're like, well, you can't do that. It has to restart every time you start the car. But, unless you pull a fuse or something, it's been known to happen. It's been known to happen.
Out.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Optima Invitational.
Sure.
This has been going on for a while now, and this
yeah,
has grown into something huge. It used to be guys bringing out, since 2008, and guys bringing out these kind of home-built cars and seeing what they can do with them, kind of stretch their legs on the road course and autocross and all kinds of good stuff. And now cars are being built specifically just for this.
Right. It's pretty amazing. 2008, we walked the floor at SEMA, and it was pretty barren during, a recession, right? And we said, how can we kind of spark some interest, get things rolling? In addition to that, we asked ourselves, it's so cool to see these vehicles here on display. And there's a lot of, at the time, magazines. Remember those?
Yeah.
A lot of magazines that were doing articles on these cars. Fantastic builds, wonderful builds. You never saw them driving.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on outside.
That was a pretty good noise out there. They're running pretty hard.
Pretty big. I don't know if we could hear that, but it was pretty good.
So they were, you'd never see them driving. You'd never see performance specs or anything on them. But we knew that there were some builders out there that were building stuff, that street vehicles using pretty much race car technology, but still remaining street vehicles that would perform at race car levels. And we said, how cool would it be? This was Jimmy Day from FM3 and myself, and we were walking through there, and how cool would it be if we could get these cars on a track and prove to people that these SEMA vehicles are not just trailer queens, right?
Yeah.
Or wet paint cars that were pushed in. Now, we all know that there are.
There
right?
still are, yeah.
But some of the vehicles out there have been built and would run. So we challenged a lot of those builders and said, we're going to have an event. At the time, it was at Pahrump. Come out and run with us, right? We're going to have a series of, things that we're going to do. First of all, you got to drive the car there, so it has to be proven that it's street worthy. Then you got to do a speed stop, which was a genuine 0 to 100 to 0 at the time.
Okay.
And there was a lot of locked up brakes and people running into the desert, so we didn't have a long enough runway, I guess. And that's been modified a little bit, but 0 to 100 to 0. And then we had an autocross and a design and engineering and also a road course. So 5 events, and we still have those 5 events today. The 0 to 100 to 0 has been modified into a speed stop where people go forward or launch hard and then go through a little chicane and then turn around, come back, and stop in a stop box.
Okay, yeah.
A lot more safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of running out into the desert
yeah.
with their very, very expensive car.
You got it.
How have the cars changed? Because, there's I'm sure you have some builders and some drivers that have been pretty consistent almost the whole time since 2008, bringing out new things.
Yep.
But the cars must have changed over the years. It's not just builders. Maybe engineers are getting involved and using it as their test bed.
Yeah. A lot of engine builders, a lot of suspension companies. You know, Detroit Speed and Engineering, you know, those guys, and Lingenfelter. Every component. Falcon's out here, and they're actually, you know, designing tires around this and making a tire that is a wonderful tire for running on the road course and autocross, et cetera. So to answer your question, yes, components have changed. A lot of the builders that were there from the beginning are still with us, a lot of new ones. We've had Ring Brothers come and do stuff. We've had the Riddler winner car come out and run. I mean, all kinds of different stuff. But they are, the cars back then and cars now, if you were to kind of line them all up and look at them, there were some incredible cars back then, but there's some gnarly stuff now.
I attribute paint protection film, PPF.
Right.
The best PPF allowed all the coolest cars to start showing up and compete in that. What does it take to get invited, or how do you start to compete in the Optima? I call it the Optima Invitational, but it's got a much bigger name. It's got the Ultimate Street Car
Series. Something like that. It's a mouthful.
Is it still an Invitational, or how does that work?
Yes, and so SEMA remains an Invitational to a certain extent. You can earn your way in, though.
Okay.
And we have a series, either 7 or 8 events, depending on the year and how things work out, events that people can sign up for, pay a, you know, ridiculously low entry fee, come out and compete. And if you win in your class, you automatically win a spot to the SEMA Invitational.
Okay.
Or you can win a popular choice. You know, what do we call it? I'm sorry, I can't remember what the judge. I'll think of it. But it's basically you've shown a lot of wonderful spirit, and you've got a great car. And
yeah.
Maybe you weren't the fastest guy or gal, but we think you're great, and come on
sure.
out.
Sure,
Because a lot of it is camaraderie, right? So we have one of those for each event that we give away. And then at SEMA, we used to do what's called the Golden Ticket, which we would actually walk around SEMA and give out, you know, look for 10 cars that we would say, hey, you want to come compete, right? And it was, you know, kind of badge of honor. I got chosen, and people would come out and compete. Now that we have the event at SEMA, most of the event, it's hard to choose something quick enough so that they would be ready. So we've invited some through just knowing, hey, these cars are cool cars are being built.
Right, like what's being built. Because it used to be so many cars would debut at SEMA, but now we're kind of teasing what these builds are going to be.
Yes.
And a lot of them are creating content around the build. So we all know what it's going to be. We know what the power plant's going to be. Don't get to really see the final product until SEMA. But instead of just one big unveil at SEMA, there's a lot more to this story leading up to SEMA. So you kind of know ahead of time who to call and say, I heard you guys are building something cool.
Yes. And please call and brag about your car.
Yeah.
We want to know about it. One of our great long-term ambassadors, Jonathan Ward, you know Jonathan?
Sure, yeah.
So he's got the 300 SEL 6.3.
Oh, he brought the Mercedes out.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, anyway. But I've been following the build and watched his videos, and we've been, the first 2 days of SEMA, been running around and doing the interviews, so I haven't seen the car yet.
Gotcha. Well, but he's great, and his owners are great. And I said, whatever we can do to make sure that car comes and competes is great. And so most all of his past builds, the owners can fly in and drive the car in the event. Mm-hmm. And his new owner of this car is actually going to go out and, you know, drive it hard.
And he should, because that's a cool car. It's not what you'd expect, but then underneath, it's just done. It's just full done up. Full
it's crazy.
Art Morrison chassis and LS engine, all in this Mercedes.
But that's a golden ticket.
Yeah, that's right? Fantastic.
That was a shoe-in. So.
How many events do you guys do?
Well, typically it's 7 to 8-ish. It fluctuated a little bit. Just because of timing and because we got a lot of other activation of other events going on. Jimmy and Wally at FM3 are responsible for all of our events, not just that.
Yeah.
Not just the Optimus.
And they're kind of all around the country, and that's where people get to compete.
Yes.
And then it all kind of ends here at SEMA. Yes. And then you reboot and start over next year.
Yep. Yeah, kind of exciting. We're going to Daytona next year.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm supposed to announce that. But anyway, scoop here.
There
news.
We go. We're going to Daytona. Optimus Invitational is going to Daytona. Right. Or maybe not. We'll see. Right. We'll see what happens.
I don't think it'll be a 24-hour, but yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It'll be something fun. Well, Cam, thanks so much. It's always great to catch up with you. You guys have a hell of an event going on out there. We're going to go out and watch a little bit of it because we can kind of hear it as we're stowed away in a trailer here. But thanks so much. The website is Optima Batteries.
OptimaBatteries.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. SEMA 2022 brought right to your earbuds. We go so you don't have to. It's beautiful. It's crowded, and it's well attended. Matt did a yeoman's job of those interviews, man. Solid.
Thank you.
Serious.
And on our social media, we'll be putting up a lot of the photos that correspond to the interviews and a bunch of the stuff that we saw here.
So, till next time, this is Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Gather around for Halloween with Pluto TV's 31 Nights of Horror. All month long, Pluto TV is bringing you the best Halloween movies, shows, and more. Watch classic horror movies like The Grudge or The Blair Witch Project, or scream along with your favorite stars like Ryan Reynolds in Life. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows. The best part, it's so free, it's chilling. No credit card, no sign up, no fees. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start screaming now.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.